Usher. Seeds of Revolution. My Most Loved Gospel on Jesus. Commentaries on the Fifth Gospel of St. Thomas. Discourse number 1. Given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India.
The disciples said to Jesus, "Tell us what the kingdom of heaven is like." He said to them, "It is like a mustard seed, smaller than all seeds, but when it falls on the tilled earth, it produces a large branch and becomes shelter for all the birds of heaven."
Human relationship has changed a lot and has changed for the worse in all dimensions. The deeper relationships have disappeared. The wife is no more a wife, but just a girlfriend. The husband is no more a husband, but just a boyfriend. Friendship is good, but cannot be very deep. Marriage is something which happens in the depth. It is a commitment in depth. And unless you commit, you remain shallow. Unless you commit, you never take the jump. You can float on the surface, but depths are not for you. Of course, to go into the depth is dangerous, bound to be so. Because on the surface, you are very efficient. On the surface, you can work like an automat. No awareness is needed. But the more you penetrate into the depth, you will have to be more and more alert, because every moment death is possible. Fear of death has created a shallowness in all relationships. It is juvenile. A boyfriend or a girlfriend may be fun, but it cannot become a door to the deepest that is hidden in each and every one. With a girlfriend, you can be sexually related, but the love cannot grow. Love needs deep roots. Sexuality is possible on the surface, but sexuality is just animal, biological. It can be beautiful if it is part of a deeper love, and if it is not part of a deeper love, it is the most ugly thing possible, the ugliest. Because then there is no communion. You simply touch each other and separate. Only bodies meet, but not you, not I, not thou. This has happened in all relationships. But the great relationship has completely disappeared. And the greatest relationship is between a master and a disciple. You will not be able to understand Jesus if you cannot understand the dimension of that relationship which exists between a master and his disciples. That has completely disappeared. wife is substituted by a girlfriend, husband is still substituted by a boyfriend, but the master and the relationship that exists between him and the disciples has completely disappeared. Or it has been substituted by a very contrary thing that exists between a psychiatrist and his patient. Between a psychiatrist and his patient, a relationship exists which is bound to be ill, pathological. Because the patient comes not in search of truth, really not in search of health, because this word health is very meaningful. It means wholeness. It means holiness. It means a deep healing into the self. A patient comes not for health, because if he comes for health, he cannot be anything else than a disciple. A patient comes to get rid of the illness. The attitude is totally negative. He has come just to be forced to become normal again. Just to become a working part of the normal world again. He has become maladjusted. He needs adjustment. And the psychiatrist helps him to be adjusted again. But adjusted to whom? Adjusted to this world, this society, which is absolutely ill. What you call the normal human being is nothing but normal pathology, or normal madness, normal insanity. The normal man is also insane, but insane within the boundaries, accepted boundaries of the society, of the culture. Somebody sometimes trespasses, goes beyond the boundaries, then he becomes ill. Then the whole society which is ill says that that man is ill. And the psychiatrist exists on the boundary to help this man back to the crowd. The psychiatrist cannot be the master because he himself is not whole. And the patient cannot be the disciple because he has not come to learn. He is disturbed and he wants not to be disturbed. His effort is only for adjustment, not for health. And the psychiatrist cannot be the master. He is pretending in the West, and sooner or later he will pretend in the East also, that he is the master, but he cannot be. He himself is ill. He may help others to be adjusted. That's okay. One ill man can help another ill man in some ways. But one ill man cannot bring another man who is ill to be whole. One madman cannot help another madman to go beyond madness. Even your Freys, your Jungs, your Adlers are absolutely ill. Not only the ordinary psychiatrists, but the greatest of them are ill and pathological. I will tell you a few things so you can feel. Whenever somebody will mention anything about death, Freud will start trembling. Twice even he fainted and fell down from the chair. Just because somebody was talking about mummies in Egypt. He fainted. Another time also, Jung was talking about death, corpses, and suddenly he trembled and fell down, fainted, became unconscious. If death is such a fear to Freud, what about his disciples? And why death should be such a fear? Can you conceive a Buddha afraid of death? Then he is no more a Buddha. Jung has reported that many times he wanted to go to Rome to visit the Vatican, and particularly the library, Vatican's library, which is the greatest, which has the secret most records of all the religions that have existed, which is rare. But whenever he will go to purchase the ticket, he will start trembling. Just going to Rome, what will happen when you go to moksha? And he will cancel the ticket and come back. He never went. Never. Many times he tried, and in the end he decided, no, I cannot go. What is the fear going to Rome? Why a psychiatrist is afraid of going to religion? Because Rome is just the symbol, the representative. And this Jung has created a philosophy around his mind, and that philosophy is afraid of being fettered. Just as if a camel is afraid to go to the Himalayas. Because when a camel comes near the Himalayas, for the first time he comes to know that he is nothing. This whole philosophy that Jung has created is just childish. Because man has created so vast and cosmic systems. And all those systems are in ruins now. The fear is going to Rome means going to the ruins of the great systems that the past has created. What about your small system? What about this small corner that you have cleaned and decorated? What about your philosophy? Great philosophies have tumbled down and gone to dust. Go to Rome, see what has happened. Go to Athens, see what has happened. Where are the schools of Aristotle and Plato and Socrates? All have disappeared into the dust. Greatest systems in the end come to the dust. All thoughts finally prove to be useless. Because thought is just a man-created thing. Only in no thought you come to know the divine. So thought, you cannot come to know the eternal, because thought is of the time. And thought cannot be of the eternal. No philosophy, no system of thought can be eternal. That was the fear. At least 4 or 5 times, Jung made reservations and cancelled. And this Jung is one of the greatest of psychiatrists. What about his disciples? If he is so afraid of going to Rome, even you are not afraid, not because that you are better than Jung, just only because you are more unaware. He is aware that in Rome his head will come down. The moment he will look at the ruins of all the great systems, a trembling, a fear of death, that what will happen to my system? What will happen to me? Takes the grip. He trembles and comes back. And in his memoirs he writes, and finally I dropped the whole project. I'm not going to Rome. And this same happened to Freud many times. He also tried to go to Rome. Then it seems not just a coincidence. And he was also afraid. war.
Fred is as angry as you can be. Fred is as sexual as you can be. Fred is as scared of death as you can be. Fred is as neurotic in his behavior as you can be. So what is the difference? He may be a more intelligent man, maybe a genius perhaps. He can help a little, but he is as blind as you are as far as the ultimate is concerned, as far as the secret most, the innermost core of being is concerned. No, psychiatry cannot become religion. It may become a good hospital, but it cannot become the temple. It is not possible. And a psychiatrist may be needed because people are ill, maladjusted. But a psychiatrist is not a master. And the patient is not a disciple. And if you come to a master as a patient, then you will miss. Because a master is not a psychiatrist. I am not a psychiatrist. People come to me and they say that I am suffering from this mental anxiety neurosis, this and that. I say it is okay because I am not going to treat your anxiety. I am going to treat you. I am not concerned with your diseases. I am simply concerned with you. And diseases are on the periphery. And there is no disease where you are. And once you come to realize who you are, all diseases disappear. They are basically because you have been hiding self-knowledge. You have been avoiding yourself, the basic encounter. You have been avoiding. You don't want to look at yourself. Why you don't want to look at yourself? What has happened to you? And unless you are ready to encounter yourself, you cannot become a disciple, because a master can do nothing if you are not ready to face yourself. He can only help you to face yourself. Why you are so afraid? Something has gone somewhere in the past. A child is born. He is not accepted as he is. Many things have to be changed. Forced, he has to be disciplined. He has many powers. With the society, the parents, the mother, the father, they cannot accept those powers, have to be denied, repressed. Only few parts can be accepted and appreciated. So the child has to work it out. He has to deny his many fragments of being, which cannot be allowed manifestation. He has to deny them so much that he himself becomes unaware of them. This is what repression is, and the whole society exists on repression. A greater part of the being of the child has to be repressed, completely thrown into the dark. But that repressed part offers, tries to rebel, react, wants to come in the light. And you have to force it again and again back. Because of this, you become afraid to encounter yourself, because what will happen to the repressed part? That will come again. That will be there. What will happen to the unconscious? If you encounter yourself, the unconscious will be there. All that you have denied will be there. And that gives you fear. Unless the child is accepted totally as he is or she is, this fear is bound to remain. But no society has yet existed which accepts the child totally, and no society seems to exist ever which will accept the child totally, because it is almost impossible. So repression is bound to be there more or less. And everybody has to face someday this problem of facing oneself. You become disciple the very day you forget about what is good, what is bad. You forget about what is accepted, what is not accepted. You become a disciple only the day you are ready to expose your whole being to yourself. The master is just a midwife. He helps you to pass through a new birth, be reborn. And what is the relationship between a master and a disciple? A disciple has to trust. He cannot doubt. If he doubts, then he cannot expose himself. When you doubt somebody, you shrink. You cannot expand. When you doubt, a stranger is there, then you close yourself. You cannot be open, because you don't know what this stranger is going to do to you. You cannot be vulnerable before him. You have to protect. You have to create an armor. With your master, you have to drop the armor completely. That much is a must. Even before a lover, you may carry your armor a little. Before a beloved, you may not be so open. But with a master, the openness has to be total, otherwise nothing will happen. If you withhold even a little part of you, the relationship is not there. Total trust is needed. Only then the secrets can be revealed. Only then the keys can be offered to you. But if you are hiding yourself, that means you are fighting with the master. Then nothing can be done. Struggle is not the key with the master. Surrender is the key. And surrender has disappeared from the world completely. Many things have helped it. Since 3-4 centuries, man has been taught to be individualistic, egoistic. Man has been taught not to surrender, but to fight. Not to obey, but to rebel. Man has been taught not to trust, but to doubt. There has been a reason for it, because science grows through doubt. Science is deep skepticism. It works not through trust, it works through logic, argument, doubt. The more you doubt, the more scientific you become. The very path is opposite to the religious path. Religion works through trust. The more you trust, the more religious you become. And science has worked miracles. And those miracles are very visible. Religion has worked greater miracles, but those miracles are not so visible. Even if a Buddha is there, what you can feel, what can you see? He is not visible. Visibly he is just a body. Visibly he is just as mortal as you are. Visibly he will become old and die one day. Invisibly he is deathless. But you don't have the eyes to see that which is invisible. You don't have that capacity to feel the innermost, the unknown. That's why only trusting eyes, by and by, start to feel and become sensitive. When you trust, trust means closing these two eyes. That's why trust is blind. Just like love is blind. Trust is even more blind than love. But when you close both these eyes, what happens? The inner transformation happens. When you close these eyes, which see outwardly, what happens to the energy which goes through the eyes? That energy starts moving backwards. It cannot flow from the eyes towards the objects. It starts a turning. It becomes a turning. Energy has to move. Energy cannot be static. If you close one outlet, it starts finding another. When both the eyes are closed, the energy that was moving between these two eyes, through these two eyes, it starts a turning, a conversion happens. And that energy hits the third eye in you. That third eye is not a physical thing. It is just energy that moves through the eyes towards the objects, is now returning towards the source. It becomes the third eye, the third way of seeing the world. Only through that third eye a Buddha is seen. Only through that third eye a Jesus is realized. If you don't have that third eye, Jesus will be there, but you will miss him. Many missed him. In his own town, people thought that he is just that carpenter Joseph's son. Nobody could recognize what has happened to this man. He is not the carpenter's son. He has become God's son. But that is the inner phenomena. And when Jesus declared that I am the son of the divine, my father is in heaven, people laughed. They said, either you have gone mad, or you are a fool, or a very cunning man. How can a carpenter's son suddenly become God's son? But there is a way. Only the body is born out of the body. The inner self is not born out of the body. It is of the Holy Ghost. It is of the divine. But you have first to attain the eyes to see. You have to attain the ears to hear. And it is a very delicate affair to understand Jesus. You have to pass through a great training. It is just like classical music. Suddenly, you are allowed to hear classical music, you will feel what nonsense is going on. It is so delicate, a long training is needed. You have to be an apprentice for many, many years. Only then your ears are trained to catch the subtle. And then there is nothing like classical music. Ordinary dated music, the film music, is not music at all. It is just noise. And that too foolish. Because your ears are not trained. You live on that noise and you think it is music. But for a classical music, you need very aristocratic ears. A training is needed. The more you are trained, the subtle becomes visible. But classical music is nothing before Jesus, because that is the cosmic music. You have to be so silent that not a single flicker of thought, not a single moment in your being, only then you can hear Jesus and you can understand Jesus and you can know him. That's why Jesus goes on repeating again and again, those who have ears, they should be able to understand me. those who have eyes see I am here. Why he goes on repeating, those who have eyes see, those who have ears hear? Why? He is talking of some other dimension of understanding. Only a disciple can understand. Very few understood Jesus. That is in the very nature of things, bound to be so. Very few. And who were those few? They were not learned scholars, no. They were not professors of the universities, no. They were not pundits, philosophers, no. They were ordinary men, a fisherman, a farmer, a shoemaker, a prostitute. They were very ordinary men. Most ordinary. Ordinary, most in the ordinary. Why these people could understand? There must be something extraordinary in an ordinary man. There must be something special which exists in an ordinary man and disappears in so-called extraordinaries. What is this? A humbleness. A trust. Because the more you are trained in the intellect, the less trust is possible. When you are not trained in the intellect, more trust is possible. A farmer trusts. He has no need to doubt. He sows the seeds on the field and he trusts they will come. They will sprout. When the right season comes, they will sprout, and he waits, and he prays. And in the right season, those seeds sprout and they become plants. He waits, and he believes. He lives with the trees, plants, rivers, mountains. There is no need to doubt. Trees are not cunning. You need not any armor around you to protect. Hills are not cunning. They are not politicians. They are not criminals. You need not any armor to protect yourself. You need not any security there. You can be open. That's why when you go to the hills, suddenly you feel a rapture. From where it comes? From the hills? No. Because now you can put the armor aside. There is no need to be afraid. When you go to a tree, suddenly you feel beautiful. It is not coming from the tree, it is coming from within you. But with a tree there is no need to protect. You can be at ease and at home. The flower is not going suddenly to attack you. The tree cannot be a thief. It cannot steal anything from you. When you go to the hills, to the sea, to the trees, to the forest, you put aside your armor. People who live with nature are more trusting. A country which is less industrialist, less mechanized, less technological, lives more with nature, has more trust in it. That's why you cannot conceive Jesus being born in New York. Almost impossible. Jesus freaks can be born there, but not Jesus. And these freaks are just neurotic. Jesus is just the excuse. No, you cannot think Jesus being born there. It is almost impossible. And if even he is born, no one is going to listen to him. Even if he is there, nobody will be able to recognize. He was born in an age without technology, without science, a son of a carpenter.
lived his whole life with poor, simple people who were living with nature. They could trust. Jesus comes one day, it is just the morning, and the sun is yet not come up the horizon. Two fishermen are there. They have just thrown their net to catch fishes. And Jesus comes to the lake and he says, "Look, why are you wasting your life? And I can make you fishers of men. Why are you wasting your energy in fishing fishes? I can make you catchers of men, fishers of men. Come, follow me." If he had said that to you when you were sitting in your office or in your shop, you would have said, "Go away. I don't have any time. Don't waste my time." Those two fishermen looked at Jesus. They looked at Jesus without any doubt. The sun was rising and the man was beautiful. This man Jesus and his eyes, they were deeper than the lake, and his radiance, which was more than the sun, they threw their nets and they followed Jesus. This is trust. Not a single question that who you are, stranger. They didn't know. He was not of their village. They had never seen him. They had never heard him. But it was enough. The call, the invitation was enough. They heard the invitation, they looked at Jesus, felt the sincerity, they followed him. Just when they were going out of the town, a man came running and he said to the fishermen, those two fishermen, "Where are you going?" "Your father has died suddenly. Come back." So they said to Jesus, "That can we go home and bury our dead father and then we will come?" Jesus said, "Don't worry about the dead. There are enough dead in the town. They will bury their dead. You come and follow me. You need not bother about the dead." And those two fishermen followed. This is trust. They heard. They looked at Jesus, he meant, and he was true, that when the father is dead, what is to be done? When somebody is dead, no need to go. And there are enough dead in the town, they will do the remaining. They will do the ritual. They will bury your father, you come and follow me. And they followed and they never turned back and they never looked back. Trust means not looking back. Trust means not returning back. A doubting mind is always looking back. Always thinking of the alternative. Always thinking what he has not done. Always thinking whether he has done the right. Should he go back or follow this madman? Who knows? He says he is son of God. But who knows? Nobody knows about God. Nobody knows about his sons. And this man looks just like us, but they followed. If you follow a man like Jesus, sooner or later he will become infectious. But you have to follow in the beginning. Sooner or later you will feel that he is the son of God. Not only that, through him you will realize that you are also sons of God. But in the beginning you have to trust. If in the beginning there is doubt, doors are closed. This relationship has disappeared because of 3 centuries of successful science. Science has succeeded so much and it has done miracles. Of course, useless miracles, because they have not added a single bit to human happiness. And a miracle is useless if happiness has not increased through it. Rather, the happiness has decreased.
The more technology, the more comfort, but less happiness. This is the miracle that science has done. The more things can be done by the mechanical devices, the less you are needed. And the less you are needed, the more you feel futile, useless, meaningless. Sooner or later, the computer will replace you. Then you are not needed at all. Then you can go and commit suicide. The computer will do everything. Happiness comes out of being needed. When you are needed, you feel happy because you feel a meaning of your being. You feel a meaning of your life. You feel that you are needed. Without you, things will be different. But now, without you, nothing will be different. Rather, things will be better without you. Because machines can do everything better than you. You are just a hindrance. Just an out of date thing. Man is the most out of date thing today. Because everything every year comes in a new edition. A new model comes to the forge. A new model to everything. Only man remains the most out of date model. Amidst so many new things, you are the only old thing. Modern minds continuously feels a meaninglessness. Nobody needs you. Even children won't need you because the government, the welfare government will take care of them. Old mother and father will not need you. There will be homes, government estate homes. They will take meat. They will take care. Who needs you? And when you feel nobody needs you, you are just an unnecessary burden. How can you be happy? In the old days, you were needed. Somewhere, a Jewish mystic Hillel has said in his prayer, and he must have been a very trusting man, very prayerful man. He says to God in his prayer that don't think that only I need you. You also need me. You will be nothing without me. If Hillel is not there, who will pray? Who will look up to you? I am a must. So remember this. I need you, that's right. You also need me. But the whole universe needed you. Even the God. Then you had a meaning, a significance, a fragrance. But now nobody needs you. You can be disposed easily. You are nothing. Technology has created comfort and made you disposable. Technology has made you better houses, but not a better man. Because better man needs some other dimension, and that dimension is not of mechanics. That dimension is of awareness, not of mechanicalness. Science cannot create a Buddha or a Jesus. Science can create a society in which a Buddha will become impossible. Many people come to me and they ask, why no more Buddhas are now, no more Tirthankaras, no more Jesus? Because of you. You have created such a society, it becomes more and more impossible for a simple man to exist, for an innocent man to exist. And even if he exists, you will not recognize. Not that Buddhas are not there, difficult, but they are there. You may be passing them every day when you go to your office, but you cannot recognize. You are blind. Trust has disappeared. Remember this, that Jesus lived in an age of trust, a deep trust. His whole glory, his whole significance can be understood only that through that dimension of trust. Now, we should enter this small piece of Jesus saying, but the disciples said to Jesus, tell us what the kingdom of heaven is like. They were not questioners. They were not curious people. They were not going to argue. Their question was innocent. When a question is innocent, only then a Jesus can answer it. When a question is innocent, do you know? If you have already the answer, then the question is not innocent. You ask, is there God? And you have already the answer. You know that, yes, there is. And you have come only to me just for confirmation. Or you know that there is none. And you have come just to see whether this man knows or not. If the answer is there, then the question is coming. Then it is not innocent. It cannot be answered then by Jesus. Because Jesus can answer only innocence. When a disciple asks, there is no answer in his mind. He does not know. He simply does not know. That's why he is asking. Remember that. When you ask something, remember well, are you asking because you have already an answer? Are you asking through your knowledge? Then there can be no meeting. Then even if I answer, the answer will never reach you. You are not empty enough to receive the answer. The answer is already there. You are prejudiced, poisoned already. There are two types of questioning. One, out of knowledge, then it is useless. A debate is possible, not a dialogue. But when you ask out of ignorance, knowing well that you don't know, when you know that I don't know and ask, you have become a disciple. Now it is not going to be an argument. You are just thirsty and you ask for water. You are hungry and you ask for food. You don't know and you ask. You are ready to receive. A disciple asks, knowing well that he doesn't know. When you don't know, you are humble. When you know, you become egoistic. And Jesus cannot talk to the egos. The disciples said to Jesus, disciples mean those who were fully aware they don't know. Tell us what the kingdom of heaven is like. Jesus continuously talked about the kingdom of heaven. That created much trouble. The very terminology created much trouble. Because the word kingdom is political. And politicians became afraid. That's why he was crucified. Because they thought that this man is talking about some kingdom which is going to the earth. And this man is talking that I am the king of that kingdom. This man is trying to create a revolution, an overthrow of the government. This man wants to create another kingdom. The king the viceroy, the officers, the priest, the Anglican state. And this man was influential because people listened to him. And people not only listened to him, whenever they listened to him, they were transformed. They became aflame. They were totally new. Something happened in them. So the priests, the viceroy, the Pontius Pilate, Herod, the king, and the whole government, the secular government and the sacred government, both became scared of this man. This man seems to be dangerous. Such an innocent man there never was. And he looked dangerous. He was misunderstood. But there is always possibility of a Jesus being misunderstood. The problem is he has to use your language. There is no other language. And whatsoever he says, he has to say in your words. There are no other words. And your words already are too much burdened. They carry too much meaning already. They are too much loaded. He was talking simply kingdom of God, kingdom of heaven. But kingdom, that word is dangerous. Kingdom gives a hint of some politics. Jesus was not a revolutionary of this world. He was a revolutionary, a master revolutionary, but of the inner world. And he was talking of the inner kingdom. But even the disciples were not aware what he is saying. When you come to a master, there is a meeting of two different dimensions. The meeting is just like as the sky and the earth meet. Just on the meeting boundary, if trust is there, you can move into the sky. If trust is not there, you cling to the earth. If trust is there, you can open your wings and move. But if trust is not there, you cling to the earth. This man brings a danger to you. What is kingdom of heaven? What type of kingdom? The kingdom is absolutely opposite, diametrically opposite to the kingdom of this world. And Jesus explained and explained, but difficult to make people understand. He said, in my kingdom of God, the poorest will be the richest. The last will be the first. He talked exactly like Lao Tzu. And he was a man like Lao Tzu. The last will be the first in my kingdom of God. He is saying the humblest will be the most significant. And the poorest will be the richest. And one who is not recognized at all here will be recognized there. Upside down. It has to be so. You stand near a river, and the river is silent, and there are no ripples. You look at your reflection. It is upside down. Reflection is always upside down. In this world, really, we are upside down. And if we have to be put right, everything has to be put right side up. But that will look as if everything is going to be upside down.
a chaos is needed. Buddha becomes a beggar, the last man. He was a king. But the kingdom of God belongs to the last. He left the kingdom of this world. Because the kingdom of this world is just useless. It is a meaningless burden. You carry it, but it is not a nourishment. It destroys you. It is a poison. It may be very slow poison, so you cannot feel it. One man was drinking, another was passing, a friend. So the friend said, "What are you doing? That stuff is this slow poison." The man said, "It is okay. I am not in a hurry." Whatsoever you call life is a slow poison. Because finally it comes to death. It kills you. It never does anything else. You may not be in a hurry, but that doesn't make any change in the quality of the poison. It may be slow. You may not be in a hurry, but still it will kill you. The kingdom of this world belongs to death. The kingdom of heaven belongs to eternal life. So Jesus says, "Those who are ready, come to me. I will give you life abundant." Jesus passed through a village. He was thirsty. And then he came to a well. A woman was drawing water from the well, and he said, "I'm thirsty, give me a little water to drink." The woman said, "But I belong to a very low caste, and it is not allowed, and I cannot give you water." Jesus said, "You don't worry, you give me water, and in exchange I will also give you a water of my well. And once you drink out of it, you will never be thirsty again." Disciples asking, "What is this kingdom of heaven like?" Because that which is not known to us can be explained only in terms of like. Hence, all myth. Mythology means trying to explain things which you don't know and cannot know in this state of mind through something which you know. Trying to explain the unknown in the terms of the known is myth. Bringing some understanding to you where you are. The kingdom of heaven cannot be explained directly, immediately. It is impossible. Unless you enter it, there is no way to say anything about it. Whatsoever is said will be wrong. The truth cannot be said. Then what Jesus, Lao Tse, and Buddha are doing continuously for years, if the truth cannot be said, what they are doing? They are trying to explain to you something which cannot be explained through some symbols which you know. Trying to explain the unknown through the known. This is the most difficult thing in the world. Parables, myths, stories. And there are foolish people who try to analyze a myth, dissect, and say that this is a myth, this is not truth. They analyze and dissect, they do a surgery on the myth, and then they say this is a myth, this is not history.
Nobody has ever said that this is history. And myth cannot be dissected because it is simply symbolic. It is just like there is a milestone and there is an arrow, and on the arrow it is written Delhi, and you dissect the stone and you dissect the arrow and the ink and the chemicals and everything, and you say, some fool has done this, there is no Delhi in it. Myths are milestones, arrows towards the unknown. They are not the goals, they simply indicate. That is the meaning of the disciples' question, tell us what the kingdom of heaven is like. We cannot ask what the kingdom of heaven is. Look at the quality of the question. We cannot ask. That will be too much, asking what kingdom of heaven is. We cannot expect the answer also for that. We can only ask what it is like. Means say something which we know, make some indications through it, so we can have a glimpse. It is just a blind man asking what light is like. How you can ask what light is when you are blind? If you ask, the very asking debars the answer. It cannot be answered. Light can be known, you need eyes. But what the light is like, that means say something in the language of the blind. All parables are truths in the language of the blind. All mythologies are truths garbed in the language of the blind. So don't dissect them. You will not find anything there. They are just indications. And if you have trust, indications are wonderful. In a temple in Japan, there is no Buddha statue. People go inside and they ask, where is the statue? There is no statue, but just on the pedestal, one finger pointing towards the heaven. And this is Buddha. The priest will say, this is Buddha. I don't know whether the priest understands it or not. This finger pointing to the moon. What a Buddha is? Just a finger pointing to the moon. The disciples ask what the kingdom of heaven is like. Say to us in a parable, in a story that we children can understand. We don't know. We don't have any experience. Say something which can give us a glimpse. He said to them, said Jesus, it is like a mustard seed. It's smaller than all seeds, but when it falls on the tilled earth, it produces a large tree and becomes shelter for all the worlds of heaven. This, the mustard seed, Jesus has used very much for many reasons. One, the mustard seed is the smallest seed. God is invisible. It's smaller than the smallest. From where you can indicate him? At the boundary is the mustard seed, the smallest. Beyond that, you will not be able to understand, because beyond that is the invisible. The mustard seed is the boundary, the smallest in the world of the visible. You can see it, but it is very small. If
you go beyond, you enter the world of the subtle, smaller than the smallest. This exists on the bounds, and this mustard seed is not only the smallest, it has a very mysterious quality. When it grows, it becomes the biggest of trees. So it is a paradox. The seed is the smallest and the tree is biggest. God is the invisible and the universe is the most visible. The universe is the tree and God is the seed. God is the unmanifested and the universe is the manifested. If you break down a seed, you will not find the tree there. You can dissect it. You will not find a tree hidden there. And you can say there is no tree. And people were just foolish, talking that a great tree is hidden in the seed, there is nothing. This is what analysts have always been doing. You tell them that this flower is beautiful, they will take it to the lab. They will dissect it to find where the beauty is. They will come upon chemicals and other things, and they will dissect and analyze, and in many bottles they will label different fragments of the flower. But there will not be a single bottle in which they will find beauty. No. They will come out of the lab and they will say, you must have been in some illusion. You dreamed. There is no beauty. I have dissected the whole flower. Nothing has been left. And there is no beauty. There are things which are known only in their wholeness. You cannot dissect them. They are greater than their parts. This is the problem. A basic problem for those who are in search of truth. Truth is greater than all the parts joined together. It is not just the sum of parts. It is greater than the parts. A melody is not just the sum of all the notes, of all the sounds. No, it is something greater. And all the notes meet. A harmony is created. A harmony becomes manifest which was not there in single notes. I am speaking to you. You can dissect my words. They will all be found in a dictionary. But you cannot find me in the dictionary. And you can say all the words are here. So why bother? It happened once, Mark Twain went to listen to a friend who was a priest. The friend was insisting for many, many days. He was one of the greatest orators, a very poetic orator. And he was appreciated very highly. Whenever he will speak, the church will be overcrowded. But Mark Twain never came to listen to him. The friend insisted again and again, then Mark Twain said, okay, I'm coming this weekend. On the Sunday, he prepared the best. All that was beautiful in his mind he arranged, because Mark Twain was coming. And Mark Twain sat just in front. And the priest delivered his best speech ever. He brought his whole energy to it. It was really beautiful. It was a symphony. It was a poetry. But he became by and by afraid, apprehensive, because Mark Twain was sitting there as if dead. Not even a glimpse of appreciation came to his face. The people clapped so many times. They were ecstatic. And just Mark Twain was sitting there, not at all
giving any indication that he has been impressed this way or that, neither negative nor positive. He remained indifferent. And indifference is more deadly than negative attitudes. Because if you are against, at least you have some attitude towards it. If you are against, you give some meaning to it. But if you are indifferent, you say this is absolutely useless, not even worth to be against it. Then the speech finished. Mark Twain came back in the car with the priest. The priest could not ask. They remained silent. Just when Mark Twain was getting out of the car, the priest said, "You have not said anything about my lecture." Mark Twain said, "It is nothing new. I have a book in my house, and you have simply copied from it. This lecture is borrowed, and you cannot fool me. You can fool those fools there in the church. I am a man of letters, and I study, and by chance, only the last night I was reading that book." The priest couldn't believe it. He said, "What are you saying? I have not copied it from anywhere. It is impossible." Mark Twain said, "Every word that you said is there, and tomorrow I will send the book." Tomorrow, he sent a copy of a big dictionary. And he said, "You can find all the words." This is the mind of the analyst. He can kill a poetry immediately. He can say, "This is just words joined together." He cannot see between the words. He cannot see between the lines, and the poetry exists there, and the beauty exists there, and the ecstasy in God and all that is significant always exists between the words, between the lines. The mustard seed is the smallest and contains the biggest. You cannot see God because he is the smallest, the mustard seed. But you can see the universe. And if the universe is there, the seed must be there. How can there be a tree without the seed? Can there be a tree without a seed? Whether you can see or not is not the point. Can there be this universe without a final cause, a source? The Ganges is there. Can the Ganges be there without a source? And this vast universe, and you think it can be without a source? Not only this vast universe, but such a harmony in it, such a universal symphony. Such a universal system. It is not a chaos. So much discipline in it. Everything in the right place. And those who know well, they say, "This is the best of all worlds that are possible. Nothing can be better than this." There must be a seed, but the seed is very small. It's smaller than the mustard seed. The mustard seed is used as a myth to indicate these were fishermen and farmers and gardeners who were asking, and they will understand the parables. The parable of the mustard seed. If you dissect it, you miss. If you dissect religion, you miss. Either you can see it directly without dissecting, or you cannot see. There is one way which trust uses. In the seed you cannot see the tree, but you can go and sow the seed in the ground. This is what trust will do. He will say, "Okay, this is a seed. I trust it will become a tree, and I will go and put it in the field. I will find
a suitable soil, and I will protect this seed, and I will wait and pray, and I will love and hope. I will dream. What else you can do? You can sow the seed and wait and dream and hope and pray. What else you can do? Then suddenly one day, one morning, you are awake and the seed has become a new thing. New sprouts are coming out of the earth. Now the seed is no more seed. It has become a tree. It is becoming a tree. It is blooming. What happens when a seed becomes a tree? That too is part of the parable. The seed has to die. Only then it becomes a tree. The God has died into this universe. He cannot remain aloof. He is in it. He is lost in it. That's why you cannot find God. You go to the Himalayas, to Mecca, to Kashi, or anywhere you like. You will not find him anywhere. Because here, he is here everywhere, just as the seed is in the whole tree now. You cannot find the seed. The seed has died into the tree and become the tree. The God has died into this universe, into this existence, and has become the cosmos. He is not a separate thing. He is not like a carpenter who makes something and remains separate. That's not possible. He is like a seed. The tree grows out of it, but then it disappears into the tree. You can find God again only when this tree will disappear. Hindus have been saying that you can find God in the beginning of creation, or you can find at the end of the creation. In the beginning, when the world is not, the seed is there. But you are not there to find him, because you are part of the tree, you are leaves of the tree. Or he will be there in Pralaya, when the whole world dissolves, when the tree becomes old, dies. And this is happening in every tree. When the tree becomes old, new seeds come again, millions of seeds. In Pralaya you will find millions of gods again. But then you will not be there. That's the problem. There is only one way to find the God, if you can find him here and now on every leaf. Only then you can find him. If you are looking for a particular image, a Krishna, a Ram, then you will not find. They are also leaves. Of course, more beautiful, more alive, more green, because they have realized God, that he is everywhere. When Jesus says the kingdom of God is like the mustard seed, he is saying millions of things. That's the beauty of a parable. You say nothing, you say not much, and you say many things. When the seed dies, the universe is there. When the seed dies, the tree is there. This is the kingdom of God. Here is the kingdom of heaven. And if you are looking for it somewhere else, you are looking in vain. If you want to look into the kingdom of God, you also become like a seed and die. Suddenly, the tree is there, you are no more, and God is there. You will never encounter God. If you are there, God is not there, because the seed is there. When you disappear, God is there. So there is no encounter really. When you are not, God is there. Emptiness in your hand, then God is there. You no more, then God is there. Again a paradox. The seed contains the tree, but the seed can kill the tree also. If the seed becomes too much egoistic,
If the seed thinks I am enough, and if the seed becomes afraid of death, then the very container will become the prison. Then the very cell that was protecting the tree, before it reaches to the right soil, will become the prison. And then the tree will die and the seed. You are like seeds who have become prisons. A Buddha is a seed, a Jesus is a seed who is not a prison. The seed, the cell, has died. Now the tree has sprouted. He said to them, it is like a mustard seed, smaller than all seeds. But when it falls on the tilled earth, it produces a large tree and becomes shelter for all the worlds of heaven. But when it falls on the tilled earth, right earth is needed. Just dying of the seed won't do. You can die on a stone. Then there will be no tree. There will be simple death. You have to find right soil, right earth. That is the meaning of discipleship. This is a training. Discipleship is a training, a learning to become a tilled right earth. The seed is there, but the right earth has to be found. You have the tree within you. The master can only give you the right earth. He can till you. He can throw the weeds out. He can make the soil worthy to receive. He can make the soil rich with fertilizers. He is a gardener. You contain all, but still you will need a gardener. Otherwise you go on and go throw the seeds anywhere. Then they fall on the cement road and they will die there. Or they will fall on the path and people will walk over and they will die. Somebody is needed when you are dying who can protect you. Look, when a child is born, you need a midwife. Nobody says that without midwife it will be good. The midwife is needed because the moment is very delicate. Greater is the moment when the truth is born. Greater is the moment when God is born in you. Greater than all births, the master is nothing but a midwife. Otherwise, many things are possible. Miscarriage may happen. The child may die before it is born. A master is to protect, because the new sprout is very delicate, helpless. Anything can happen to it. It is very dangerous. But if you trust, and trust is needed, there is no other way. If you doubt, then you will shrink and the seed will never die. If you trust, the seed dies. Because the seed cannot know the tree, that is the problem. The seed wants to be certain that if I die, I will become the tree. But how can you make the seed certain? This is the absurdity of faith. Faith is absurd. You want to be certain that I can become a sannyasi. I can renounce all. I am ready to die. But what is the guarantee? That when the seed is no more, the tree will be there. Who can give you the guarantee and how the guarantee can be given? And even if the guarantee is given, the seed will not be there to whom the guarantee is given. What guarantee can prove to the seed that when it is not there, the tree will be there? No guarantee is possible.
That's why faith is absent. Believing in that which cannot be believed is the meaning of faith. Believing in that which cannot be believed, there is no way to believe it, and still you believe it. The seed dies in deep trust, the tree is born. But a tilled earth is needed, a right ground is needed. The whole discipleship is just to become a tilled ground. It produces then a large tree and becomes center for all the worlds of heaven. And when your tree has really grown, when it has become a Buddha tree, then millions of birds who are in search, they come and take shelter. Under Jesus, many words of heaven take shelter. Under Buddha, many words of heaven take shelter. Those who are in search of the deepest, to them that tree, the Buddha tree, the Jesus tree, becomes a shelter. And there they can feel the unknown throbbing. There they can trust. There they can come to an understanding with the unknown, and there they can take the jump. The kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed. You are the kingdom of heaven. You are like a mustard seed. Be ready to die. Prepare for your death. Of course, there will be trembling and fear and apprehension. The jump is going to be difficult. Many times you may come back. Many times you will go to the very brink and turn back and escape. Because there is abyss. The seed can know only the abyss. The seed cannot know the tree. There is no way so that the seed can witness the sprouting tree. There is no way. The seed has to die and believe in the unknown that it will happen. If you are ready to die, it happens. Go and sow seeds in the ground. When the tree has come, then dig the ground again and see where the seed is. It has disappeared. It is not there. Go and dig in a Buddha, in a Jesus, you will not find the man, the seed. That is the meaning that Jesus is the Son of God, no more son of Joseph the carpenter. Because the seed came from Joseph the carpenter and Mary. But now the seed has disappeared, the cell has disappeared, and this tree never came from the visible. This is from the invisible. Look at Jesus, the seed is no more there, only God is there. Be ready to die so that you can be reborn. Drop the mind, the body, the ego, the identity. Suddenly you will find something new is growing within you. You have become a womb. You are pregnant. And to be spiritually pregnant is the peak of creation. Because you are creating yourself through it. Nothing is comparable to it. You may create a big painting, a great sculpture. Nothing is to be compared with when you create yourself, when you self-create yourself. But when it falls on the tilled earth, be ready to die. But before you are ready to take the jump, become a tilled earth, become a disciple, become a learner, become humble. Become as if you are not. Soon you will be really not. But get ready for it. Behave as if you are not. Then it produces a large tree. and become shelter for all the worlds of heaven. It has been always happening so.
You are here, near me. My feet is dead. That's why you are here. It is not because of you that you are here. It is because of me that you are here. But to say because of me is not okay, because there is no me. The seed has disappeared. Now it is just a tree. And if you can get a glimpse of your own possibility through me, the work is done. The kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed. You are the seeds. You are the possibility of that kingdom. Get ready to die, because that is the only way to be reborn. Enough?